going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thank you so much, Capital. It is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and on this episode, we go deep on all things Olympics, and we catch up with the defending decathlon champion from the Olympics, looking to maintain the crown, and that would be Olympic champion and Lululemon ambassador Damian Warner, the pride of London, Ontario, who might be also the pride of Götzis, Austria, where he does arguably his best work. A record 8th hypo meeting decathlon win for Damian. He is in great form heading to Paris. Now, he still has a chance to fine-tune everything before Paris, and that is what will happen at the 2024 Bell Track and Field Trials in Montreal, where all of our great Canadian athletes will officially punch their ticket to the Games. And I want to talk to Damian about his perspective and his viewpoint going into these Games. It's his 4th Olympic Games. He, as I mentioned, comes in as returning champion. So that's different as a reigning champion. In some ways, you are the hunted, but in many ways, he is the hunter because fellow Canadian Pierce Lepage, who's been a guest on our podcast, is the reigning world champion. So what are those dynamics like, given that obviously they could share a podium with each other? They've shared the track as competitors and as training partners. But I also want to know what this time has been like for his family and his partner, Jen, given they've got another baby on the way. The last time he was at the Olympics, he had a new baby. So he times these things in cycles, evidently. And over the last couple of years, he's had the added pressure and blessing of being a working parent at a high level. So many things going on in his life that I'm super curious about and excited for, quite frankly. So let's say no more. Let's go deep with Damian Warner, who wore the Lululemon Paris 2024 athlete kit with style as a model, but he's looking to be on the track as a champion.
Well, Damian, it's great to catch up with you again. Once again, the king of Götzis. I feel like we could just replay our previous conversations about your love for the meet, the atmosphere, and the fact that the performances are always top-notch. Was this year different for you at all?
This year was a little bit different, just because last year when I went, I lost to Pierce. So it kind of, all the experiences that I had up to that, I kept winning over and over and over. So you kind of felt like it was like Groundhog Day. So losing last year, I felt like it was a really good thing for me. Going back this year, I feel like I had a different mission to try to get back on top. And it's always fun to kind of challenge yourself in that way. And I just tried to go out there and compete the best that I could. And thankfully for us, just as I mentioned before, the crowd was incredible again.
It's really set up perfectly, not that I'm an expert, but on the outside looking in, for great performance and competition. The Olympics, not so much, even though there's lots of eyeballs. As you start to taper towards that Olympic meet, how are you feeling mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually? What place are you in?
I feel like I'm in a great place right now. Mentally, I'm right where I need to be. Physically, my body's feeling good. But then also, like, my home life is going really good. We're expecting another baby at the end of September, so that's going to change our world. And then obviously Theo's growing up really fast too. So I just feel like I'm in a really good place. The balance in my life is really good. Time's a ticking and I feel like I'm ready to compete.
It's so interesting when you look at the difference of the last Olympics, where Theo was just here. And now you're going into these games and Theo knows and understands a little bit more what's going on and sometimes trains with you. And, you know, he's going to have a bit of a teammate. Can you compare and contrast the, you know, what life is like for you, you know, now in comparison to back then?
Well, back then it was also tricky because we were dealing with a pandemic. There was not many places that we could go. Training was very restrictive in what we could do. But then, yeah, as you mentioned, Theo was also very little. He didn't really understand where I was going. But this time around, he fully understands. He has his Canada shirts on. He's ready to go. And whenever I'm packing my bag, he always asks me, like, are you going to Paris? And it's just like, not yet, but very soon. And I think that makes it a little bit more special because as I'm competing, like I was just in Austria, Jen sends me videos of Theo cheering for me as I'm competing. And that really touches my heart. And that means a lot because I'm doing this for more than myself. So I think this time around will be a little bit different. But I'm really looking forward to this time around because the family understands a little bit more. But then also we're going to have fans in the stands, which is going to be really cool. So I'm excited for this Olympic experience.
You really only had a small group with you last time. That is a distinct difference. What's the contingent going to look like? How much family, friends are you planning to have with you, which is a special time, but also for you, in some ways, a bit of a business trip.
Yeah, it's obviously a little bit of a business trip, but because Jen's expecting at the end of September, they're not going to travel with me. They're going to stay home and kind of watch as a group, which will be very cool. But then we'll also have like a pretty big group of people that are coming over to watch me. All four of my coaches will be there. My physiotherapist will be there. Some other family and friends will be there. So there's going to be a solid group over there cheering. So we're going to have the best of both worlds, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think the atmosphere in Paris is going to be awesome.
I know you really are programmed only to think in four-year cycles, but have you allowed yourself to think beyond this Games and how much longer you want to continue to put your mind, body, family through this high-level competition?
Yeah, I think back to a conversation that I had in 2016 with Vince Carter. My family surprised me and I got to go meet him. And obviously we talked in the past and Vince Carter was an idol that I had when I was a kid. And I asked him that same question, like, how long are you going to play for? And he's like, as long as I enjoy it, as long as I love it. And that's kind of like my same answer, you know, is as long as I'm loving my sport and able to stay healthy and feel like I'm able to give something back to the sport and feel like I'm still able to improve in any kind of way, I'll keep doing it. I definitely want to go till the World Championships next year. They'll be back in Tokyo, so I want to experience that stadium at full capacity. But then after that, I'll kind of take it year by year and just keep asking myself that same question. And as long as the answer is yes, I'll keep going. But as soon as it's no, then I'll step away and let all these young guys take over.
Young guys aren't taking over just yet, but you're helping to bring in many new people to the sport. You talked about community and that importance. I remember talking to you about the fact that that's what excited you about the partnership with Lulu. Now that you've been partnered for a bit, give us a little bit of progress report on how that's going and what you're looking forward to with the big platform of the Games.
I think my partnership with Lululemon has probably been one of the best partnerships that I've ever had in the sport. They listen to me, you know. I feel like it's like a family, like a group. Any kind of feedback that I have from a competitive gear standpoint or clothing, like I say, I like this, but I'd love for it to have this. They can make those changes. And it really feels nice that like the voice that I have is heard and they're listening to not only myself, but all the other athletes. And it's just really cool. They look after me. They look after my family, my coaches. And I just very grateful for that partnership.
When we talk about the team as a whole, in terms of track, obviously, you know, you're a medal contender and favorite as the defending gold medalist. But across the board in athletics, the medal contenders is pretty deep. Yeah. You've been to many world championships, many Olympics now, where it's you're looking around and it's like, okay, we're going to get a medal. It's going to be a couple of us have to perform well. What's it like knowing that on multiple days we could see multiple medals?
I think that's the coolest thing. Just to see the transformation of track and field in Canada. Because as you mentioned, like we're in a position where we can get a lot of medals, but the medals are so spread out, which is awesome. You can get it in the relay. You can have Andre or Aaron or somebody else get on the podium in the sprints. You can have me or Pierce get on the podium in the decathlon. You have like 1,000 throwers that can get on the podium in the hammer throw or the shot put. You know, it's so cool. You have Marco on the track running in the 800. You have Muhammad Ahmed and Cam Levins and guys like that in the longer distance. So it's like we have so much diversity, which is different than it was when I first started. But I think that's the coolest thing, to see where the sport's like going. It's no longer a sprinting country or a throwing country. We have a little bit of everything, and I like that progress. I think it involves so many more people, and I think from a youth standpoint, it's going to excite so many more kids to think, like, maybe I can go to the Olympics and be anything that I want to be, you know? I think that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, those kids will be inspired potentially to go to Olympics. Hopefully get on a podium for no better reason than the gear is fire. You know, talk to me about the Lululemon Paris 2024 athlete kit and the pieces that you like. Did you have a sneak peek before the rest of the world got to see him?
So I did. We went to Montreal to film a commercial, and we got to walk in, and it was kind of like a secret area, right? Because not everybody could see the kit before it's released. And we walked in, they showed me all the stuff that I was going to wear, but I was kind of like peeking at some of the things that the other athletes were wearing. And it's so cool, just because I think as a team, we're all representing the same country, right? But at the same time, we all have the same goals, but everybody has their own unique style and their own unique feel. And I think one thing that Lululemon did is they really highlighted that. There's a lot of options in there for people to showcase what makes them comfortable, what makes them happy, what makes them proud. And I think that's the one thing that I took away from that kid, is that there's something in there for everybody, and there's a way for everybody to show off their own uniqueness. So I think it's really going to shine. I think there's going to be a lot of people around the village that are trying to trade for that gear. That's a big thing that happens in the village. People try to swap gear. And I think the Canada gear is going to be a hot commodity.
Is it athlete exclusive? Do you have to have Olympic standard to be able to get it? Or is there some pieces that Canadians from across the country are going to be able to rock?
Yeah, so there's obviously specific parts of the gear that you can only get by being at the Olympics, but then there's also things that you can purchase in the store. And then there's unique gear that you can purchase where some of the proceeds will go back to help out some of the Olympians. There's hats, there's scarves, there's bags. So yeah, there's something in there for everybody, a lot of really cool stuff. I'm really excited for it, you know. When I was doing my filming, I got to wear like the bomber jacket. I think that's going to be used for the opening ceremonies. And then the media jacket, which is like translucent. You can see through it a little bit. It's kind of cool. But then the closing ceremonies is probably one of my favorites, just because it's so unique and not traditionally what Canada would wear. And I think that there was a lot of eyes on that one from all the athletes that I've seen.
Yeah, when you have a body like you, the translucent is cool. I mean, like, I know we're both dads, but only one of us currently has a dad bod. So, that's why some of those pieces are specific to people like you and not me. You talked about the cool aspect of it, that some of the proceeds go right back to helping, fund athletes. Something that at times we're not the best at in our country, as good as we are at a lot of things, you know, in comparison to countries in Europe, certainly the United States, we don't necessarily support our amateur athletes always the way that we should across the board. You've been fortunate enough to have a lot of great partnerships and grassroots support. I can't go to the grocery store without seeing your face. This will be your fourth games. Compare and contrast what these conversations were like with corporate Canada, you know, over a decade ago for you and your peers to what it's like now.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different. When I was first going into the Olympics in 2012, nobody outside of my inner circle really knew who I was. So I think from a sponsorship standpoint, that was really hard to kind of get people to be on board. But then when I went to the Olympics and I performed well, there were some other people that kind of came and approached us. But going into this Olympics, it's a little bit different because I came off a gold medal. I'm a little bit more well-known in Canada, but I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of like really good sponsors leading up to the games. And it's not like that for all athletes. There's a lot of athletes that are struggling, which is always a tough thing. And I'm a big advocate for people to reach out and support some of these athletes, even at like a grassroots level, because I just see from a day-to-day basis how much talent there is in this country. And I think that a lot of people get driven away because they don't have the support that I've been fortunate to have. And we got to find a way to get those people the support, because we have an opportunity for so many medals at these games. And I think that opportunity could just continue to grow. And there's so many great athletes out there that those numbers could just keep going up and up. So we got to find a way as a country to support those athletes so that they can get to the same level and experience the same things that I've been lucky to see throughout my career.
Every games, there's an athlete whose name we didn't know going in, who becomes a household name after the 2-week span. Previously, you know, that was someone like you. You know, game recognized game. You see the other athletes doing great work. Do you have someone who you think Canadians are going to learn about and might be surprised by?
I think that there's a lot of athletes out there who, even though they've had success at the international stage, they're not known as well as they should be known. I always tell people it's crazy to me that I could walk down the street and people don't know who someone like Pierre Lepage is, you know? Like, he's one of the greatest athletes that I've ever seen, you know? He's larger than life. He's incredibly gifted. I feel like he should be a household name. People should know who he is. We have an athlete here from London, Ontario, and she's currently fighting to be on the Olympic team. So time will tell if she makes it. No pressure to her, but she's like 16. She's competing at OFSA this weekend, and she has a chance to go to the Olympics in the discus throw. Her name's Julia Tonks. Her father's a Canadian record holder in discus, Jason Tonks. Like, if she makes the Olympic team, you got to know who she is, because being a high school athlete in Ontario and going to the Olympics is unheard of. And she's in a great place right now. So there's a lot of athletes just like her. And there's a lot of athletes on the team that people need to know, not just myself or Andre, but people like Cameron Rogers. She needs to be a household name in the sport because she's just dominating. You know, Ethan needs to be a household name. He's just dominating. So we have a lot of great athletes in the sport. A lot of up-and-comers that have just broken records. So we need to hear about them. And I hope that the media and the CBC will do justice to those athletes and showcase who they are leading up to the games.
No question. You mentioned Pierce, and your sport is a funny one where you're competing, but you're so communal. You're all cheering for each other. And you've got this aspect with Pierce, who's someone who you've seen obviously steadily improve. And, you know, the mentor is now challenged by the mentee in a way. For you, what's that relationship like, knowing that, you know, he's a real threat, but also a teammate and someone who's benefited from some of the guidance that you've given him?
Yeah, I think for me, when I've looked at my journey in the sport, I've always just tried to be the best decathlete I could be. You know, I also want to be the best decathlete that's ever lived. But at the same time, in order to do that, you have to beat the best. And I want to beat people when they're at their best, you know, like, so I want Pierce to show up to the line healthy. I want Kevin Mayer to show up to the line healthy. And I want to go out there and try to beat them when they're at their best and I'm at my best. And if they so happen to beat me, I can live with that, you know, like I can live with the idea that we showed up and they beat me. And that's just how the cards lay. But that's sport at the end of the day. I don't do this just to be dominant. I do this to try to push myself and to try to drive myself to see what my potential is. But it's been really awesome to have Pierce kind of in the line right now, just because I'm one of the older athletes. And I think that with him up and coming and being one of the younger guys, it's made me not be complacent. Every single day that I go to the track, I'm trying to be the best that I could be, knowing that he's kind of right there. He was below me at one point in time, and now he's probably ahead of me or right beside me, you know? So I think that that's really cool for me to have, just for my evolution in the sport, but then also to be able to go to the games and have two people there trying to get on top of the podium against the rest of the world is really cool.
Sounds similar to the way Ashton Eden will talk about you and your relationship when you were pushing him and he was, you know, the best in the world. What did you get from that relationship and being able to train with him and have a relationship with him?
That was one of the coolest things of my career, just because I remember going to our first ever training camp in Santa Barbara in 2012, leading up to the Olympics. And we'd do workouts together and he'd just like kick my butt. And I'd go home being like, what do I have to do to beat this guy? And then I'd watch videos and I'd come back and he'd kick my butt. But every single time we'd do these workouts, I could see myself getting closer and closer and closer and narrowing that gap. And I think that's a cool thing. You see your progress and it keeps driving you to want to be better. And I think that's that happens when you're the underdog or when you're chasing somebody else or when you're getting chased by other people. So I think right now there's a lot of great decathletes. The decathlon's at the best place that it's ever been. So it's just driving me to be the best that I could be. I feel like my love for the decathlon is at an all-time high, and I can't wait for these games to go in there and just be challenged by all these guys and try to use some of my my experience and what I've learned throughout the years to my advantage.
The talent is best that it's ever been, but that doesn't mean we might see the best results. You know, at our last games, the schedule was not really set up for success. Yep. Neither was the temperature, but there's not much. You'll know about that at this point. But in terms of the setup, the schedule, the infrastructure support, how much do you know about what Paris will be like? And will it be a bit more athlete-friendly than what we saw a couple years ago?
I think there's going to be a similar schedule to there was in Tokyo. So it's not necessarily ideal, but at the same time, I've been through that schedule so many times that I know how to handle it at this point. So I think that's one of the advantages that I've had, that I have, is that this will be my fourth games now, so I've experienced this schedule before. The weather is looking like it's going to be really hot again. Again, I experienced that before, so I can lean on some of the experience that I have. But I think the one unique thing about these games is that I think the atmosphere is going to be at an all-time high. Just coming off the last Olympics where there was no fans, I think that there's a lot of people excited to go out and watch the Olympics. With it being in Paris, like one of the most traveled to cities in the world, I think that the atmosphere is going to be incredible, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Lastly, before I let you go, as a hoop head, I have to ask you about the fact that at these games, you're going to have both the Canadian men's and women's national teams there with, I would argue, their strongest teams ever. You're going to have, no question, strongest United States team since the Dream Team ever. It is a business trip, but in your heart, in your mind, on your phone, tablet, in person, will you be able to consume some basketball given the huge fan of the sport that you are?
I got to find a way to get to one of those games. You know, so out of the two games that I've been to, some of my coolest memories was like walking into the Athletes Village, and I remember seeing like Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, Marc Gasol, and just seeing how big these athletes are in person, but also like my childhood kind of came out where I was just like, I'm in the same place as one of these athletes, you know, competing for similar goals for our countries. So that was really cool. I remember seeing Luka in the last Olympics Village and just seeing like, this guy is a monster. You know, I don't think the world realizes how big this guy is. Yao Ming was coaching the national team, so he was there. So that's super cool. So seeing these guys around the village is one thing, but I want to get there to see these guys on the court, because when do you get to see that much talent on the court at the same time, besides an all-star game? This will be pretty cool.
Well, you still have some hops. So maybe, you know, once you're done the decathlon, we'll get you a jersey. You could be the bench reacts guy at the end of the bench, just waving a towel.
I think my days on the basketball court are over, but I'm fine being a fan.
The triple jump and a Euro step are kind of the same thing, so yeah. you're good.
Yeah.
Well, listen, as you continue to taper and get ready, we're ready to cheer and to watch you go for another gold. So thank you for always repping the country so well. Thank you for being a bit of a fashion model for the Lulu Fits. And thank you for everything that you're doing in community, both in London, you know, all across Canada, and you know, with your great partner in Lulu. So appreciate you.
I appreciate you too. Take care.
Thanks again to Damian. Great dude. Also great follow. At Damian Warner is his handle on X and IG. Also love what he's doing in the community. He's done some advocacy work in his hometown of London for the London Abused Women's Center, which I have so much respect for him for doing. And you heard it from him that some of the proceeds from this Lululemon kit go right back into community, into helping athletes get to the level that Damian is at, in to help all Canadians have better access to sport. So shout out to him. Obviously, you know how to follow Lululemon, so I don't need to tell you that. But if you want more information on everything Damian has going on, DamianWarner.ca is the website. And if you're like me and you're a Damian Warner stan, there's actually a series coming out pretty soon in July on CBC Gem, and that's Damian Warner
being a big part of Sweat and Power Season 2, which essentially follows his road to Paris. Love to get an inside look, a BTS viewpoint on all the things these athletes need to do in prep for the games. We show up, we watch, and that's amazing, but we don't realize the level of grit and sweat equity it takes to put yourself in position to bring home a medal like Damian has done. Give that a watch. Now, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, but we are going to take our Olympic conversation from the future to the past and look at some history of the games and some tragedy that goes along with it. Stay with us.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is the show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that you had the show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. And as I was mentioning before the break, and as we've often talked about on this very podcast, sports and politics oftentimes converge. They mix quite a bit. And when they do, they give us some valuable lessons about both, quite frankly. And that's exactly what's happened historically at Olympic Games. And there's no better example of that than the 1936 Berlin Olympics. It's a games that is used in history books right now. Topics like the Holocaust, U.S. International diplomacy, propaganda by Hitler are all at play in those games. And they've been the study of a couple of writers and producers for well over a decade. And they would be Glenn Allen and Richard Kaufman, the next guests on the Going Deep podcast. And I'm talking to them about a powerful book that they've put out about the games that summer hosted by a Nazi regime. The book is called Played, The Games of the 1936 Berlin Olympics. I wanted to have them on so that they could share what they've learned researching these games meticulously for not 10, not 15, not 20, but 25 years. We're certainly going to see the worlds of geopolitical issue, human rights, and sports collide the games in Paris. So what can we learn from a great example of that happening in the past? Let's go deep with Richard Kaufman and Glenn Allen.
Well, fellas, thank you so much for taking the time. And thank you so much for this body of work, which took a lot of time. You know, there are going to be people listening to this who were not alive when you started this project. I want to go back to the start. Why this subject? What made you call to tell this story?
Okay, well, I'll tell you how it started. Rick brought me the project back in, I think it was 1996 or 97.
Yep.
And I was intrigued by the athletic event. But the more we dug into the people and the politics, the politicians, the sports administrators, we peeled back this onion and uncovered incredible stories on all sides. And like you said, it went on for a long time. We researched the heck out of it, pitched it as a TV series and a movie, and now we're pitching it as a dramatic series. But it just, whatever we uncovered somehow related to what's happening today. You know, for example, a transgender athlete on the women's high jump team. You have the ideologies being forced on athletes, misinformation, all kinds of stuff like that. And it was so intriguing that the more we researched, the better it got.
Well, you mentioned how it ties back to today. So much has changed, not only from now to when the events took place, but so much has changed from now to when you started working on the project. Geopolitically, many things have changed. Our sensibilities in generally, culturally, has changed. Has that time at all changed the way you view the events, the way the story is told? Has your viewpoint and perspective changed at all?
Well, no, because what we see is that with the Trump era coming out, all of this is coming back. So you may think that things have changed, but really not very much has changed.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. You know, like idolatry of the people that are your presidents or kings or whatever. This is happening right now in America. It's very scary. That's what happened in Nazi Germany. You know, and like Glenn said, you know, the race issue has not really gotten that much better in America. Maybe it's slightly changed, but I don't think we're where we want to be. So it really does hark on what is happening now, what has been happening in the past 25 years. You know, you would hope that we have gotten more progressive in those 25 years, but, you know, the last 8 years have shown we're still at a place where we shouldn't be.
It also shows it can regress. You know, the Holocaust didn't happen overnight. That's one of the things that I hope people get from the book. Like, it happened over a couple of decades. And our story is just a little piece of that bigger story. And that was one of the questions that was posed to us, or that we pose in the book, is would the Holocaust have happened had the U.S. boycotted the 36 Olympics? And the more you think about that question, you know, you read these stories. Again, I'll use the example of the transgender athlete. I think Caitlyn Jenner was still Bruce Jenner when we started this project.
Yes.
And then, you know, there was a man basically who was on the women's high jump team for Germany. So I guess over time it did change. It brought that story to the forefront of our drama.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the lessons, you hope that history doesn't repeat itself. Then you look around today and you see a lot of the same things. You see a lot of the racial stereotypes, bigotry, misinformation,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff, duplicity, sports and politics mixing. It seems to never end, and we seem to never learn from it.
Since, whether it's Olympics or equivalently large events like World Cups, there's been a conversation about boycotts and mm-hmm. what influence they might have, what, if any, governments can do to influence hearts and minds in around sports. Given your work on this, and you mentioned the question about the United States potentially boycotting in 1936, what's your educated opinion on that topic?
Well, I'd have to say that we helped fuel the economic buildup of the Nazi Party by saying we would go to the Olympics. I mean, I guess every case is different, right? You'd have to look at it. But in this instance, there was enough out there that people knew what was going on. I mean, it was deplorable. We should have never gone there. And we gave, I guess, the okay for the rest of the world to go when we said yes. So yeah. I really don't think it was a good idea. We went. I don't think that all boycotts are the right thing to do in every instance, but I do believe in this one. There was enough proof what was going on back then.
Yeah, it validates.
Yeah.
For those, you know, some of those ideologies, like the Sochi Olympics, when, you know, Putin released his anti-gay message to the world. Unfortunately, who suffers during a boycott are the athletes.
Right.
And, but in our story, you know, the athletes are the real heroes. You know, amidst all this turmoil and pressure, the athletes are the ones that, you know, tell the human story, basically, to overcome all these things.
How so?
Well, the obvious example that, I mean, the story everybody knows is Jesse Owens, you know, shattering the myth of Aryan supremacy that's the obvious one. But there is all kinds of stories of sportsmanship throughout the book. And I mean, all of our athletes are involved in that, and that really gets to the heart of the book and of sports in general. I think that kind of overcomes that political turmoil and pressure.
So really, it goes back to what you were saying, Donovan. You know, do we think a boycott was right? Politically, I do believe this should have been the right thing to do, but it crushes the athletes. You know, any boycott is going to crush athletes. You don't want to do that. It only comes around once every 4 years. They want that glory. But at what price? It's a tough call.
Yeah, and the athletes want it to go. They wanted to prove Hitler wrong.
Right.
And they did.
My producer and senior writer brain, when I see, 25 years researching something, gets anxiety, quite frankly, in terms of how many hard drives, how well were they backed up, how many interviews. Going through this process, how many different interviews did you conduct? And I imagine it must have been kind of like pulling a thread where everyone you talked to may have led you to more people that you wanted to talk to. How did you even decide where to start on a project that is so big and so vast?
Oh, well, it started with the games themselves and the athletes. And then we had to determine who out of the hundreds of athletes. Obviously, we couldn't focus on every single one of them. So we picked the ones with the best stories. And there's about eight of them there. And aside from that, there are politicians. There's a sports writer who's one of our main characters for the AP named Alan Gould, who's kind of the voice of moral reason. Throughout the book, there's also the head of the American Olympic Committee, Avery Brundage, who's a famous anti-Semite, leading the charge to get the athletes over there. But I guess to answer the question, it was kind of like a thread of the sweater. It just grew and grew.
Yeah, we would read something, and it would bring up another instance, and we would read about that. And it wasn't as much the interviews as it was the media that we were putting together and doing the research on, whether it be books or going to the Holocaust Museum and doing research in Washington. But yeah, Donovan, you're right. Like one little thing led to the next thing. And it just kept going and going and going.
Yeah. And then we'd hear stories like the Jesse Owens story, of course. Then Marty Glickman, right, who you might know, famous sportscaster. He was one of the only Jews on the American team, and he was kicked off of his team the morning of his race. So the story is that there's a story of the transgender athlete that we mentioned. There was a German woman who was Jewish. She was a high jumper. She was kicked off of their team.
I mean, she was used as a pawn, basically, to get us there.
He was lured back to Germany to jump for the German team as a Jew to lure America to the games. Once America was on their way, she's kicked off the team. Yeah. So we kept finding out all these little stories. There was a German a fencer who was half Jewish, and she was here in America, but she competed for the German team. And she's half Jewish, and she wins a silver medal with a swastika armband for giving a Nazi salute, half Jewish. So, we kept discovering these things. And then, of course, it all leads to the bigger story, which is where all this heads, which is World War II and the Holocaust.
The Olympic movement is somewhat different now. We're at a point where it's tougher to find countries willing, interested, able, having the political will to host games. A lot of that is fiscal and financial. Oftentimes, when people do want to host, it might be potentially for a sports washing type of motivation. When you go back and you look at the Nazi regime, the calculated decision to want to host, what were their motivations and what were their, you know, hopeful end goals of hosting the games?
Well, the number one point of Germany wanting to host the games was propaganda. Hitler did not have any purpose or reason to want these games in the beginning. It was Goebbels, his head of propaganda, that pushed it on him and made him realize that all that money that was going to come in and all that good press and cleaning up Germany for that short period of time to make it look like a gem of Europe was the best way possible for people to get behind them. I mean, the whole thing was a propaganda deal.
And Germany was in a deep depression. You know,
so the Nazis, the Nazis wanted that money. They wanted the prestige that the Olympics brought. And they wanted it all over the world. They wanted the world to see how, what a show they could put on.
And there's nothing, one of the other characters in our book is Ambassador Dodd. He was the ambassador to Germany. He saw all of this coming. And, you know, his daughter gets involved romantically with some high ranking Nazis. He sees all this coming. His warnings go unheeded.
I mean,
it all came true.
There was a lot of politicians that were saying to Roosevelt, we shouldn't be going. And Roosevelt just basically did what all American politicians had done and said, we don't get involved. You know, this was an endeavor that was always private. So the government didn't get involved. They basically thought that if they did, that was just showing too much power.
It's funny because when you look at our similar issues now, is it possible to not get involved? Like, by definition, in one way, shape, or form, are you having an influence either by intervention or by omission?
I think these days, with the way the news, global news, is at our fingertips, you know, it'll always be political.
Yeah.
There might always be a reason to boycott, but whether we do or not remains to be seen.
But I think you're right, Donovan. It's how can you separate the two now?
I want to go back, you know, to, you know, what you mentioned about the benefits for Nazi Germany. You mentioned the propaganda and obviously the perspective, but I just want to drill on that a little bit deeper, you know, for our audience. Is it fair to say, from a profit standpoint, fiscally, if these games don't happen, that Nazi Germany wouldn't have been in the position to create the atrocities that were then to come? Is it too simple to draw that link?
Well, we're thinking, you know, the other countries around the world were waiting to see if the United States would go. So had we boycotted and the rest of the world boycotted, maybe it would have drawn more attention to what was going on because, you know, the anti-Jewish doctrines were already in place.
Yep.
And by 36. So maybe it would have drawn more attention to that. And also, you know, aside from profiting, the national pride of Germany was at stake. It was a real, you know, they wanted to show off their athletes were the best in the world. And so it was more than just the money is why they did it too.
It is hard to say if we didn't go, would it have stopped the war? I mean, obviously it is not that simple, but we sure did validate their thoughts and their actions by going.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, Marty Glickman was kicked off the team the morning of his race, but he was, you know, the American officials agreed with it because they didn't want to insult Hitler. So,
sadly, anti-Semitism, you know, tied to sports is not new. It's not unique to any specific time period. It has been a conversation in the news, you know, of recent time, both, you know, when you look at, you know, scenarios in the NBA and, you know, comments that are made or things that have been supported, but also, you know, a conversation about what the appropriate reaction to them should be, because that can also open up more tropes, if you will. I wonder, as we've seen these events pop up periodically in sports, how you two have received them, knowing what you know and knowing the body of work that you've been working on so closely.
Well, it saddens me that that is still prevalent in our society and in sports. I mean, it's almost ridiculous to think that it's in sports. why does religion, race, anything have to do with two people going up against each other or teams going up against each other? So I can't fathom how this happens to this day at all in society, let alone sports.
Yeah, that's why we hope people read the book and realize it so that it'll change.
You know, the book is a time piece and period piece. It's obviously, you know, historical lessons there, you know, to be learned. And I imagine it, you know, being used, you know, in schools, you know, to educate in a way that's much more entertaining and enlightening than, you know, a history textbook. But it's also like a cautionary tale, right? It's a warning signal. For you, when people leave this piece of work, what do you want them to think? What do you want them to feel? What do you want them to have learned that they didn't necessarily know when they started it?
Well, I would say, you take a look around you. You know, read between the lines. You know, look at people as human beings. You know, look at how politicians are treating people, what they say about people. You know, some of the rhetoric that's going on today. It's like Rick said, it's mind-boggling that it still exists. But I would hope that they look at that and say, you know, read the book and then look at what's happening today. See the similarities. And then say, you know, hold on a second. This needs to change.
I also would like people to, and I guess people that have read it now, say this to me. They love the fact that the athletes rose above all the duplicity that was happening. And their accomplishments made it joyous. So I want people to understand that, yeah, this is all these politics. They happen. They still happen. And you have to realize that. But then this joyousness of sport, that can bring people together in the right way. And I think that's a big, important part of this book as well, because that brought together the world in the most tumultuous time in history. And all these athletes wanted to do was have fun, meet, compete, get to know each other. They were young, you know, and that youthful spirit is there too in the book. I want people to understand that these people didn't have these same thought processes as their politicians. They were youthful and they had ideas and hopes and dreams.
It's a real celebration of the human spirit. The book's not a downer by any stretch.
Yeah.
It's a triumph, really. And even at one of the last scenes in the book, last chapters, all the athletes gather together. And it's almost like a big party. People from all different countries, different races and creeds, they're united. You know, so it's a real celebration of the human spirit.
Yeah.
To that end, for you both individually, is there a specific anecdote or nugget or you know, quote or soundbite that you got over the course of this marathon of putting it together that really kind of got your attention and stuck with you?
Well, I can say, I'll speak for me on this one. When one of our politicians started using phrases like America first or make America great again, these are exact quotes that Hitler used. I want people to understand he's duping everybody. He's using the same rhetoric as the Nazi party. That's amazing to me.
Fake news also, or it was Lügen Press, the lying press, and make Germany great again.
Yeah.
It's the same exact.
It's the same exact words. Exact thing.
Well, there's one thing that stood out for me a little, well, it's more of an anecdote. The day of the opening ceremonies, after all the athletes marched and gathered around, this is a fact that we discovered. So they're all gathering around and the music's playing. And at the end of the celebration, cannons go off. No, actually, before that, all the athletes gather around. They release 25,000 pigeons into the air. And then they blew off some cannons. And all the athletes are standing in the middle of the field. And the pigeons, they got scared from the cannons. And a bird droppings flew all over the athletes. I was like, isn't that a great metaphor?
Yep.
The story. It's a true story. And you have, you know, Jesse Owens looking at these other guys. Some are laughing. Some are disgusted. They don't know what's going on. Everyone's wiping it off of them. And Hitler and everyone else in their boxes, they're oblivious to it. So I thought that was a really, it's a little small little detail that, you know, it's kind of funny in the book, but it's a great metaphor for what was going on.
Well, those small little details certainly help bring it to life and give it color. Glenn, we were talking about this before we started recording, but I'll ask you both again. I don't want to be the person who doesn't just enjoy what they have and is already on to the next thing, but my mind goes there. When you started working on this, from a content perspective, we were in an entirely different world, but now we are in one where, you know, scripted series and prestige TV and docuseries and streamers looking for really interesting content is somewhat ubiquitous. And I wonder what the interest is for this story, which you spent, you know, a good amount of time on, will have a different life in a screen somewhere at some point.
We hope so. Yeah, we'll be out at the end of the month pitching studios. And, you know, if you look at the landscape on streaming and movies, there are so many period pieces. You know, it's we watch historical pieces so we can learn from it and move forward. I don't think that'll ever go away. And this is a great one to tell. It would make a great series.
We certainly see it as a miniseries. Most definitely. The characters are very rich and it's very exciting. It's pretty much got everything for anyone. So we certainly see it as a miniseries.
Yeah, it's got spy. There's a spy in the book, also based on truth. There's romance, there's comedy.
There's sex, drugs.
Sex, drugs, all that. And then, of course, these incredible sporting events that they keep you on the edge of your seat. Some of these finishes are just great.
Well, you managed to fill out the bingo card in terms of what it takes to make a really compelling, interesting story. One that I found was at times chilling, but also at times uplifting. So, you know, thank you for balancing out the sweet and sour of emotions as I worked through it. And excited for people to be able to experience it in the same way. And potentially, you might be talking to both of you again if there is another execution for this powerful story. But again, working on a long form piece for me for 25 days is exhausting. So the fact that you both spent 25 years on this, kudos, because to be honest, marriages don't last that long, and you both seem to still like each other. So thank you for making it for all of us.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
And once again, the book is Played, The Games of the 1936 Berlin Olympics, available wherever books are sold. And quite frankly, based off of the way they were talking, I expect the docuseries, the movie, the drama, all of the above to be sold in short order. And you might be able to see that on your screens in the near future. Thank you for listening to this in your car or via your earbuds, wherever you are. Feel free to like, favorite, share, subscribe. Make sure you're cheering on all of our Canadians, including Damian Warner, this summer. And let us know who you want to hear from this summer. We've had a real great stretch of real interesting guests talking about fascinating topics. That is the model for this show. But if we are missing the mark anywhere, let us know. You can do that a couple ways. You could subscribe so you know exactly who we're talking to and when. You can rate and please leave 5 stars. But if you feel less than, that's valuable information as well. Also, hit us up on social media. We'll talk to you next time.